Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you no doubt know, the Belmont Stakes are this Saturday, and horse racing fans are in a frenzy because of the possibility of a rare, very rare in recent decades, Triple Crown winner. California Chrome won both the Derby and the Preakness, and as he goes for the Crown in Queens, where he'd be the first horse since 1978 to win all three big races, the stands will be packed like they used to be all the time back in the day. Here with me now, calling in from the Belmont racetrack to talk about this exciting moment and some Belmont history, is Brad Telius, a racing reporter and analyst at CBS Radio Sports. Hi, Brad. Welcome to WNYC.
Good to be with you, Brian.
I read that this year will be your 50th consecutive year at the Belmont Stakes.
That's right. It was a way of marking time in my life.
Congratulations on making it this far. And has New York historically been a good racing town?
It was for many, many years. Years ago, at the beginning, I would say, of my involvement with racing, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago. But in recent years, because of all its internal troubles and other problems that racing's been having, it's really become a sport that's more or less on the outside.
For people who don't know this, Belmont is absolutely huge. It's over 100,000 seats, isn't it?
Big. I'm looking at the expanse now over it. It's an enormous. It's the largest racetrack in North America. It's a mile and a half in circumference. No track is like it. And that's what makes it so interesting and also makes it so wonderful.
There must have been a more regular need for all that seating. In addition to the length of the track, which we'll talk about, that's why it's a particular challenge compared to the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness. They then have to run longer in this third leg of the Triple Crown. But what was it like at its peak? Like, are there some memorable moments,
oh, yes.
either moment, not, I don't mean for now so much moments on the track, but what was the crowd like? What were the demographics like? What did it feel like? Who came?
It was wonderful. Years ago, you know, at Belmont, especially in 1968 when it first opened after there had been reconstruction between 63 and 67 because there were some there was a fire in the grandstands, people were coming out to see this, you know, wonderful place where you can capture an entire day and see thoroughbred racing at its finest. And that Belmont 1968 when the place opened up, I'll never forget. I was in the clubhouse with my dad. We had the last two seats up in the corner of the track. I had to hold on to the scaffolding almost on the side of the track.
Wow.
It was so crowded. We saw Stage Door Johnny win that day, and it was packed. That was a wonderful era. 68 was the beginning of it when Belmont came back.
Was it a working class thing, an upper class thing? Was it racially mixed at any time?
Wonderful working class mix. You always had your senior citizens. Racing's always been affiliated with those who have been around
a
while. Yep, well, the old timers. But you had the mix. 3 years later was very interesting when 1971 we had a Venezuelan horse, Canyonero II, with over 82,000 people here. I think to this day that was the real actual record attendance. They say the one they had back in 2004 with Smarty Jones was 120,000. I don't know if that was a real actual number or not, but the one that we had for 82,000, we had in New York City, must have been out here, half of the Latino population, maybe more. It was the only time, Brian, in my 50 years, I couldn't get my car in the racetrack. I had to go to a friend's house a half a mile away.
Listeners, any horse racing fans out there? Do you go to the track? Do you go to Belmont? Do you go anywhere else? 212-433-WNYC. Just call up and tell us why you go to the track and why you love it. And have you seen a change? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or even maybe your parents told you horse racing stories. 212-433-9692 for Brad Telius, racing reporter and analyst at CBS Radio Sports, who's been doing this for 50 years now. And I guess that means you were there when Affirmed, the last horse to complete the Triple Crown, actually won in 1978. Were you
there?
Yeah,
I had the best seat in the house at the time. I was secretary of the New York State Racing and Wagering Board, and I was in the steward stand. and the view that they have of this wonder, this track is fabulous. Well, no doubt they have to. And it was one of the best Triple Crown races ever because of the competitive nature between Affirmed and his arch rival Alidar. And from the top of the stretch coming down, they were nose to nose, elbow to elbow, both jockeys going at it. And it was finally Steve Cawthon in the last few jumps to the wire when he had to change his stick and the whip left-handed in order to get Affirmed to get his nose down just ahead at the wire. And I turned to one of my colleagues in the steward stand and said, back-to-back Triple Crowns, because the year before we had Seattle Slew. I said, this Triple Crown stuff is becoming a little easy. Little did we know.
77, 78, and never again until maybe this year. So do you see any similarities between Affirmed and Chromie, as I've read is California Chrome's nickname?
Well, they're different kinds of horses in a way. Affirmed was a tough competitor who was a champion in the truest sense. Now, of course, a lot of things have happened since 78 and now, particularly in the area of medication. We're now racing with various different types of medications that horses have. It was only until 1995 when you couldn't use it on race day, and then after 1995 here in New York, you can have the use of Lasix, which is, let's not kid ourselves, a performance-enhancing medication. In those days, you didn't have it, and these horses were really running with what they were made of. And that's my only real concern about particularly California Chrome. You know, the ability to go three races over a period of 5 weeks, having to have run on medication. And that's what really separates the champions from now. Apart from that, we have California Chrome also coming from a less than a what you call noble bloodlines, the way Affirmed and Seattle Slew had come from.
What do you mean by medication? Tell us more about these performance-enhancing drugs.
Horses are now running on Lasix. It's the way to prevent and cut down on their pulmonary bleeding in the lungs. Most horses, when they run more than three-quarters of a mile or, you know, a mile or so, they're going to bleed internally, and it gets very, very difficult. And over the years, the way they've corrected that, so to speak, or to make it a little bit easier on a horse, is to use Lasix. Humans use it also. Furosemide is the term for it. And
so is this something that just prevents injury, or does it enhance performance, like make them faster?
It enhances performance because it prevents that discomfort in a horse with that pulmonary bleeding. And that has been the bane of existence for the last, you asked earlier, what's really hurting this game? Well, in a way, that's really what's happening also with horses. They felt that by using this, of course, you know, horses, you know, are able to run a little bit better, run possibly a little bit further, but it hasn't been shown that. And also cut down on injuries on the track, which is a key element also.
Christy in Red Hook, you're on WNYC. Hello, Christy.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and say that I grew up going to the races. I'm 31 as of yesterday, and my grandparents owned racehorses. So they had a stable in Saratoga, and then in we also went to Gulfstream in Florida, and they had a horse who won the Travers in Saratoga. They had a horse who won the Breeders' Cup in Toronto. And it was always so much fun, especially in Saratoga, because I grew up in Vermont. We would go, and they had a box, and going down to the winner's circle and, like, racing through the crowds, and it was just, like, mayhem. But it was so much fun, and my parents still have, like, all of the winner's circle photos.
Are you ever tempted to go because of your background with it, but you can't find people your age who are interested?
No, actually, my boyfriend and I always have talked about going to Saratoga. We don't have the box anymore, but my grandmother still has a house there, and but we haven't gone. And then, ironically, I've talked to other people about it, and other people my age, and they seem interested. But it's really funny. I have, like, this knowledge of the track, and then no one else like knows about it, and it was this really special time, I guess.
Christy, thank you so much. Great story, great call. Steve in Manhattan, I think, was there for one of Belmont's greatest days. Hi, Steve. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Well, it was one of the greatest days for the track. It was one of the greatest days of my life because I still tell this story. I mean, Secretariat broke a long stretch of no prior Triple Crowns at that time. And the horse was so magnificent. I think over 80,000 people were there. And there were very few horses in the race. And as he broke away around this mile-and-a-half track, the lead kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and no one could believe what they were seeing. And the crowd made this keening noise. It was like it transcended human sound. I've never heard anything like it. It was this high-pitched whine because nobody could believe what they were seeing. And they were screaming with such unbelief. I've never experienced anything like it in my life.
Brad, you were there for Secretariat in 73, right?
I got to say, Steve, you hit it right on the head. You just couldn't believe. He ran beyond any imaginable concept. I looked at my dad. We just couldn't, because we had, you know, seen so many of these races. We just couldn't imagine. We thought something happened to the field. They fell down or something. He was just, and each successive quarter mile that Secretariat ran got faster. So it was beyond imagination, and the noise that went up from the crowd, and of course the famous photo, which is today, where jockey Ron Turcotte's looking over his shoulder and said, "Where are they all?" Unbelievable afternoon.
Steve, thanks for your memory. Was Secretariat in a class by himself among horses then?
Unquestionably, my dad, who had seen all the Triple Crown winners except the first one, Sir Barton, in 1919, and their Belmont, wrote in my program, "None superior, few his equal." And I, over the years since I've seen that performance, I have to say I've got to go along with it. That he was in a category all by himself. When he died back in 1989, they actually did an examination of all his parts, and they saw that his heart was larger than most thoroughbreds, than any thoroughbred that they had done those kinds of examinations before.
Secretariat had a big heart.
He sure did.
Meaning more energy.
Meaning more energy and he was just so special, I mean, in every way.
Bob in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi there. Yeah, I was at Belmont Park on the day of the tragedy when Ruffian broke down. Belmont Park is a fascinating place. It's a great place. There's a sort of a mystique to it. It's beautiful, physically beautiful. I'm hoping that California Chrome wins because New York needs it, horse racing needs it, Belmont needs it. But, you know, what brought me into horse racing, 1973, I was 22 years old, it was the great superstar horses. It started with Secretariat, Ruffian, Forgo, Chris Evert, named after the great tennis player, Bolt Forbes. But, you know, let's face it, it's gone. Those old farms like Calumet Farm and Claiborne and Green Tree Stable, they're gone. And as much as I want California Chrome to win, these horses for the past 20 years, they're really not very good. They're all equally inferior horses, and the old breeders are just gone, and it's a shame. And finally, let me say also, what killed OTB, I think, was that stupid surcharge, took the fun out of it.
Bob, thank you. So he put a lot on the table there.
He sure did.
Some great stories.
And he made some good points.
And would it be possible that the quality of breeding has gone down? You would think that science would have made it better than before.
You would have thought so. We're back to that medication issue. But more importantly, a lot of the breeding, to his point, now focuses on shorter distances, races where they're sprints. And in those instances, because they're getting the higher prices at the auctions, for example, that's where the breeders are going with it. They're not really interested in the classic distance of a mile and a quarter anymore, or a mile and a half. In fact, the mile and a half Belmont is an acronym in a way. Coincidentally, they run another mile and a half race on the same day, the Brooklyn Handicap for older horses. And that was a mile and a half. And a few years ago, they scaled it back to a mile and a quarter, and then just recently brought it back to a mile and a half. So, yes, he makes a very, very good point.
So is Belmont tougher than the Preakness or the Kentucky Derby to win just by virtue of its length?
Unquestionably. You have to have a particular running style. And also, in the if you just take the race in itself, yes, to run that distance and to be able to pace properly and to have a jockey know what he really can do with his horse and try to avoid being tested by other horses in the race that may be out to set a false pace, let's say, takes a lot from a horse because they're not used to going these distances.
And that's why the Triple Crown is so difficult, because I guess it would be a different kind of horse or a horse that was trained in a different kind of way to run a shorter track than to run a longer track, and it would be the rare horse that excels at both?
Correct. You're going from a mile and a quarter for the Derby 2 weeks later, which is a very unusual situation to come back for the caliber of these horses, to race at a mile and 3/16 in the Preakness. In fact, Art Sherman, the trainer of California Chrome, expressed that was his biggest concern. And we saw a little bit of that in the Preakness when Ride On Curlin was coming to him a little bit at the end, which may be the issue on Saturday, whether or not he's got a lot left in that tank to be able to cover this mile and a half.
Nikki in Manhasset, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nikki.
Oh, hi. So I don't have any experience with the horses or knowledge about them, but we go every year for Mother's Day, and it started because I don't necessarily like the traditional Mother's Day brunch where you just, you know, kind of sit and eat for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the track and we have these beautiful seats overlooking this gorgeous track, and we yell at the horses and we run up and down and we, you know, we watch the horses as they do the parade. And it's just such a fun day.
What do
we
you
have
watch?
Such a great time.
What do you watch for during the races? I mean, besides the fact that somebody may be in the lead or pulling away or not, are there things you look for as somebody who's not a racing expert just to enjoy the experience?
Well, you know what? We go down right before each race, and we watch the horses, you know, as they parade in the circle. And I look for one that, you know, has like a really pretty tail or a really pretty mane, and I think, oh, that's the one that's going to win. It's like, you know, I judge a horse like I judge a bottle of wine. I always buy the pretty label. And, you know, honestly, it kind of works for me. We do really well every year. So
that's great.
But it's just, you know, it's the experience of being there. It's so beautiful, and it's so fun. And I'm not just sitting. You know, we're running up and down, and we're screaming, and the whole, I mean, everybody that's there, that, you know, they just get so into it, whether they know horses or don't know horses. It's just, the environment is so fun.
Nicely
and
told.
So beautiful.
Nicely told. Tell me one more thing. How many people would you say are there on Mother's Day these recent years?
It's crowded. It's well, we always have we have seats in the I forget what the area is called where you sit at the tables.
The terrace, Belmont Terrace.
Yes.
Terrace.
Second floor. Terrace. Yeah.
On the terrace, and it's full.
Nikki,
it's
that,
full.
That.
All the tables are full. So whatever that is, I mean, it's got to be, I don't know, 300 people?
In that section. Nikki,
in that particular section.
Thank you very much for calling. Great story, great stories. Brett, what would you advise people who may be tuning in on television on Saturday, maybe for the first time in their lives to watch a horse race on TV? What should people watch for? Give us a little viewer's guide.
Okay, the first thing you look for is they'll show you the parade to the post, and you'll watch all the horses. You'll see California Chrome. He's a very good horse getting into the gate. The gate is the start of a horse race is very, very important, and horses generally tip themselves off as to how comfortable they are on that particular afternoon just before the race in the parade to the post. Sometimes you see them getting a little fractious, a little antsy. You'll see the white lather. They get a little sweaty. That was one of the issues that Victor Espinosa had in 2002 when he was running with War Emblem. And we saw that right away. He got into the gate, and sure enough, the horse stumbled. So you're looking at whether the horses are comfortable getting into the gate. And then once that gate – and then – see how relaxed they become. And then once the gate breaks, you'll be able to see how the jockeys are going to be able to maneuver. Unlike the Derby, unlike the Preakness, with a mile-and-a-half race, they'll have a lot more time to be able to move around, to move, maneuver going into the first turn here at Belmont, which is, you know, a nice distance unlike the other racetracks, and they'll have a little bit more time. But they still have to worry about horses coming over on them and whatnot. And so you'll see at the break which horses, the faster ones, getting out and setting up a pace, and where California Chrome will be. Victor Espinosa usually likes to be third or fourth, his trainer told me. That's where we're looking to be going into the first turn on this wide sweeping oval here at Belmont. And that's what they should be looking for. What are these horses indicating that they're ready to run or not?
Hey, did you watch California Chrome's supposedly excellent workout last weekend that made headlines?
Yes, he did. He showed that he likes the track. One of the things that's nicknamed here of Belmont is Big Sandy. It's got a heavier sand rather than clay or loam base, and it also requires a certain amount. Horses take to it or they don't take to it. And he apparently took to it very, very nicely, which pleased both his trainer and assistant trainer, who's the son of Art Sherman, very, very much. And even the jockey, Victor Espinosa, said he's taken to this track fabulously.
Do you think Espinosa's experience, which includes in 2002 trying for the Triple Crown with War Emblem, but he stumbled out of the gate and finished way back in, I think, eighth place. Does going through an experience like that help Espinosa win with California Chrome this week?
Well, we would hope so. I had asked him yesterday, in fact, if he's doing other, if he has other mounts tomorrow and Friday to give him a little bit more, because he rides on the West Coast. He doesn't ride here that frequently. He's only had two other Belmont rides since then. But he really has to get the feel of the track now. And as many races as he can get under his belt here at Belmont, knowing the distances between the various markers, the 16th pole, for example, and the 8th pole, because it's so wide and sweeping, will give him a little bit better of an understanding when to move California Chrome and when not to.
Cameron, at Belmont Park, is that right?
Yes, I'm here at the Ruffian Clinic, which is right next to Belmont Park.
Uh-huh. What happens there?
We just moved down. We're at Cornell University, College of Vet Medicine. We just moved to the area and opened a clinic right outside of Belmont Park.
Cool. So you've seen some of these races?
Yeah, so I've attended the Smarty Jones race. I've attended the Real Quiet race. I've attended the Charismatic race. And I've seen them all fail, So I am rooting for California Chrome, but as a betting person, I'm a little bit skeptical.
Do you have your eye on one of the particular underdogs? If your vet's perspective might inform some of our other wagerers out there.
Well, now that I'm here with Cornell University, I can't get involved in betting. But otherwise, I lose my job, especially since it's a work day right now.
Okay, so let's say nobody's betting at all on horse racing. They're just kind of curious who are some of the other good-looking horses. You don't want to go there.
Well, I think that you have to keep in mind that there's trainers that are training to this race in particular. So they're pointing horses. So their horses' workouts have been designed for this distance. And, you know, they've sat out a couple of the Triple Crown races, and you got the best trainers in the world here in New York. I mean, New York racing, contrary to what the other guy said, that New York racing is dead. You know, New York racing, we have the highest purses in the world. And Saratoga meet is the absolute most successful horse meet in the world. And so we're doing pretty well here.
Great. And just tell me one other thing, as a vet. The fact that there were Triple Crown winners in 73, 77, 78, but not since. Has something changed physiologically about the horses? And our guest was talking about some of the medication. Or anything else physiologically that would have led to this drought?
Yeah, so let me first say that I'm a hospital administrator. I'm not a vet, so I don't have the vet credentials, but yes, I think that there's a different training style. Like I mentioned before, most horses aren't trained in a vigorous way to race every week the way they used to be. Years ago, horses used to race every week, every 2 weeks. And now a normal cycle is for a horse to run once a month.
Cameron, thank you so much. So informative. And enjoy the Belmont Stakes yourself. Any particular horses that you're keeping your eye on, Brad, as the competition to California Chrome? You're probably not under as much ethical restraint as our caller.
Fortunately not. This is part of the game. But, you know, one of the things is, and he brought up a good point, is the training and pointing a horse towards the Belmont. And we saw with a horse called Tonalist, who won the Peter Pan Stakes here back at Belmont. It's always good to have a race over this track back on May 10th. He won by four lengths. And it's reminiscent of what happened in 1979 when the great spectacular Bid, whose trainer said the greatest horse to look through a bridle, was going for the Triple Crown. And I saw a horse that was supplemented to the Belmont Coastal, who ran in the Peter Pan and was trained particularly for the Belmont. And that's what happened that day. Coastal came on, won nicely, spectacular Bid, finished third. Mm. Trainer said he had stepped on a safety pin that morning when his bandages fell off. But one of the key things is, yes,
pin.
You look for a horse that's being pointed, trained that way, and can handle it.
So who's that horse this year?
Tonalist. I think he's going to be a 10-1. We'll know in about an hour when they set the odds.
Okay.
It looks like California Chrome should be about 3-5 morning line odds.
One suspicious mind on our comments page, Seth writes, and I guess he heard our segment yesterday about all this match fixing in soccer. He wrote, given the guest kickoff to this segment, how about asking him if there's any reason to believe that the fix is not in? The industry wants a Triple Crown way too badly for its unsavory membership to keep it legal.
There's no fix that's in. All's fair in this race. Everybody is out to win, and they want to make history themselves.
Last thing, when people write or talk about horse racing, it's almost dreamy or poetic a lot of the time. You could hear it in our callers. People don't write like that about football or tennis or soccer. Why do you think that is?
Well, because it's the hopes. You know, you're looking at, you know, dreams when you know, a wonderful animal wins like that and there are people behind it. It's a good feeling, apart from the fact that they might have a little wager on it, of course, and they may be correct in their assessment that their particular horse is the one that's going to win. And you're right. It's a good feeling. It's one that got me involved back in 1965 when I saw my race, the whole racetrack experience, seeing the horses come out and parade and the jockeys and the whatnot. It really is, as your call mentioned earlier, there is a good feeling out here. And the tracks really have to get the sport back on it to really be able to bring that back to the public's attention.
Hey, is Mayor de Blasio going to be there on Saturday? He wants to ban carriage horses in Central Park on cruelty grounds. He's not talking about shutting down Belmont, as far as I know.
I hope not.
Have you ever thought to compare the cruelty factor between horse racing and Central Park tourist hauling?
No, well, I wouldn't think so.
Because, I mean, is it I don't even know. Are the animal rights folks on horse racing's back?
Unfortunately, yes. They've been involved in particularly one. There's a trainer who has been involved in being criticized for the way he's handled his stable and in getting involved with drugs and medications and just not being right. And there's an investigation going on right now. He happens to be the leading trainer in the United States and has had some very good horses over the years. And you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit of a demonstration maybe on Belmont with Peter.
Brad Telius, racing reporter and analyst in his 50th year covering the track, now with CBS Radio Sports. Brad, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Enjoy
the weekend.
Great. Thank you, Brian.